is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. It's a great...
You're listening to News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained since January 1997. We began our 25th year in broadcasting in January 2022, and we're just getting started, exploring the edge of human consciousness and possibility on planet Earth with founder and journalist Nicole Marie Whitney at the helm. What's really real and what's really possible? That is what we want to know. Join us at newsforthesoul.com. newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online. This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. It's a great...
You're listening to News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained since January 1997. We began our 25th year in broadcasting in January 2022, and we're just getting started, exploring the edge of human consciousness and possibility on planet Earth with founder and journalist Nicole Marie Whitney at the helm. What's really real and what's really possible? That is what we want to know. Join us at newsforthesoul.com. newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Okay, I think we're all here and we're live. This is it, Open Search Outward, with myself and former CIA remote viewer David Morehouse, who has been on the show and one of my favorite teachers of experience in the search out there, trying to find out what's really real and what's really possible for, oh my gosh, over 2 decades, if you can imagine that. David, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. You've got that I've been talking long hours voice again.
Me? Oh, I just got finished at 4 o'clock this morning.
So. Oh, my gosh. Well,
don't forget, I'm on 6 to 8 hours now. I used to be 10 to 15 hours, but you cut it down. So, yeah, I sound a little froggy. I've been, got a couple hours of sleep, maybe, if the dog wasn't licking my face. To go pee, and here I am.
Fresh as a daisy. Well, here we are.
I'm very grateful
to be here. I know we've missed a couple of weeks, mostly on my account, but here we are, moving forward. as I said in the intro, and as the intro itself said, you know, we've been trying to search from the very beginning. That's the very thing that drives News for the Soul, is what's really real and what's really possible. And one of the biggest pieces in that search for me was working with you and remote viewing and your prolific ability to explain the physics of the metaphysics and so on. So we're searching together now on this show. So what's on Dave's mind today? That's what I want to know.
Well, we had our great show last night. We had a Dakota Sioux Indian on board. He was a medicine man. And it was fun. The room was mesmerized. Of course, the room's got, I think it's approaching, this is just our club. It's close to 4,000 members now. And through the night, people come in and check in, listen, stay, don't stay, leave quietly, you know, all these different things. It was amazing. So last night, we started off with a no-topic show, which is always, met by the moderators with a little intrepidation. Why? Because you can get some really howling wolves that could come in there that are not cool. And the stuff they talk about is bizarre. So, and we don't want to do that. You know, I'm grounded in reality and science and stuff like that, which I know may be juxtaposed to many listeners, but it's just who I am. I don't believe everything, you know, and I look for qualitative, quantitative evidence of the ability to do what you say you do. And that's it. So this guy was fun. His name is Kenny, and he was there with us as a Sioux medicine man, talking about his experiences as a Sioux medicine man. And, of course, I was being my typical self, was like, hey, so, okay, let me get this straight. You got called into a ceremony, and they said to you they were bringing in the ceremony to be a Sioux medicine man. True? He goes, yeah. I said to him, it's a good thing I wasn't one of the elders sitting there, because I would have said, hey, you have to go back to the lodge building. Somewhere in there, there's an application for a medicine man. Find that. Fill it out and bring it back here. We'll consider it. He started laughing. I went, no. I mean it. If I had been there as an elder, I would have said, go get this damn thing. There's only three of them in there, we think. But we haven't made any medicine men in a long time. So go find the application. He howled laughing. It was funny because it wasn't like that. But he had to be chosen to be a medicine man. And he talked about, in limited terms, about the ritual of becoming a medicine man and what they do and how they use peyote and other stuff. It was interesting. We had a good time. And it got weird toward the end.
I bet it did.
It always seems to go too far. And when it starts to go too far, I start to rein it in because I really want people to understand the credibility of this individual. I don't want them to start going, oh, shit, well, just another crazy, because when they start going, well, you know, we told any other visiting shaman, because we don't really particularly care for shaman or, you know, like what they're about, particularly when they put shaman on the sides of their vans and then come in and want to meet with our elders, et cetera. He said, we don't let them do that. We don't let them get around the round rocks either. I'm like, whoa, round rocks? Round rocks, yeah. These rocks that are round, he says. I go, you mean like dinosaur rocks, like the rocks that you can find all over the Wyoming Badlands and how they're big? There are these big round rocks that they're round because they were swallowed by a dinosaur and they were carried in their stomach and they use them to grind up the vegetative matter or protein that they consume. And when, of course, they die, then all the tissue is decayed and gone. But the rock, the stones sit there. So they call them dinosaur stones or gallstones or other kinds of weird things for dinosaurs. And I said, is that what you mean? He goes, oh, no. These are round stones that we sent to spy on our enemies. Wait a minute. So you're saying that you sent your people, which I said, how many different tribes are there in the Sioux? And he goes through like, oh, well, it depends on what you're talking about. There's like 15 different political variations, but 5 different tribal variations. Like, I said, like, did Custer know this? I go, this is why Custer got slaughtered. He had no freaking idea that all there were this, you know, this many of you. Oh, okay, back to where we were again. I go, so you have stones that you sent to do what precisely? We sent these stones to spy on our enemies, to look at what our enemies were doing. And I was thinking, okay, I said, well, that sounds a little bit like a Tolkien to me. You know, like Return of the King, remember the big round eye stone that if you uncovered it, it could see what the hobbits were doing. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So whenever my brain draws these conclusions, it's not maybe that it's right or this guy's wrong. It's just that, so you had rock drones. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, rock drones. I'm like, okay, rock drones. So then I'm typing to the moderators. I'm going, okay. So I'm not disputing it. I have no evidence of it. But if you had rock drones and you knew where the presence of your enemy was, how the hell did the Bluecoats kick your ass and take over all your property and land? How'd that happen? Right? So it's like, this is my logic brain. It's kind of like, really? Because I would say if you had rock drones, things you could send and your medicine men could see what they were seeing, see the disposition of the U.S. cavalry, you know, it was out on the on the plains. I would have thought you had had a big leg up, you know? I don't know.
Well, you know what?
That's me.
If you put it into your own experiential Rolodex, as you like to say, I mean, you can remote view. You can be a photon of light in relative to space and time, but you don't see everything.
Do you think it's like a peyote-driven experience, or do you believe that they...
No. No, I'm just so glad that you brought this up. Because I have a good story for this one. And again, it comes down to direct experience, because I wouldn't have believed any of this until I had a profound direct experience, well, a few of them. You know, one of my most profound works has been working with you and doing the remote viewing, extended work, and the explorers and all that stuff. The other most profound experiences, other than my awakening stuff, was with the indigenous community. And it was, I mean, it was, they got me to have this experience, my upstairs team, I call them, early on, so I would get out of journalist mode. I was very stuck in journalist mode in the early days, where it had to look like the same as the other kind of newspapers, and it had to be exactly done this way as a paper, a physical paper, and blah, blah, blah. And I went to an experience called INIPI. But I'd love to hear more about what you say before I tell you what happened there.
Well, was this Mount Shasta?
Good God, no.
No.
You're going to have no woo-woo frame of reference for my story whatsoever.
No, I have no woo-woo. Okay, good, good, good for you, girl. All right, I love you. I know it. So I love you. So you know the way I think. I was going to trick you into the Mount Shasta story and go, okay, now let's talk about this. So, So what do I believe that it can happen? Yes. Absolutely. I believe that ancient peoples and ancient civilizations, you know, were connected in ways that we lost or never. I mean, we always had the potential. We always were born with the ability, right? We know that, Daniel. You're born with these abilities to be connected, to be to recognize and embellish your omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, your eternal nature. But the rules of the society governing, you know, the established limitations of the legions of the status quo, they are the ones that tell you what you can and you cannot do. And we adopt that, much to our chagrin and much to our limitation, our promise, our potential. So when I talk to a medicine man of the Dakota, and he is practiced, studies, works, you know, believes, is a guy who recognizes that they've lost their youth. They're losing their youth. Their youth no longer care about their original language. They don't care about their original crafts. They don't care about their original beliefs. They're off part of trying to be at light speed, you know, to be whatever else they can be, but not that. So there are a few of them that remain in the tribe that continue this progression, this morphic resonance that the tribe has. So I believe what he says to me. I don't believe in things like, they don't call it this, but essentially what was described last night was like psychic surgery. When I hear that term, I think John of God. And John of God was not a spiritual man. John of God was a guy that was using a ruse to get into the pants of every young female that he could. That's what he was doing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's just a scumbag, you know, who became a wealthy scumbag because people were flocking from all over the world. Even David Hughes. You know David Hughes.
Yes, I
right?
know. He told me about his experience there.
Yeah. Well, he told it, you know, tried to tell it in a positive light, but if you're looking behind his eyes, he was like, yeah, that was a bunch of crap, you know, that kind of thing. So it was not unusual for the guy to, like, secret, you know, sleight of hand, a scalpel blade, and, you know, to cut you so that there was some pain and blood. But what he was pulling out of you was not a tumor. It wasn't anything else. This was not a holy man that was healing.
No, he was a sexual predator.
He was a sexual predator, yeah. But he was a sexual predator that people came from all over the world to stand in his presence, right? So.
Yep.
Point is, use some damn discretion about these things before you jump in. And you have heard that from me for decades now, and I know that's what you talk about. But I believe what these guys say, but I don't believe it when he starts talking psychic surgery. I don't believe it when he starts talking, you know, miraculous immediate healings. Like, you know, grandmother shows up and she has a basketball-sized tumor in her abdomen, and two medicine men work on her, and within 30 minutes she comes back out and there's no evidence of a tumor. I wish that was happening. I would truly, absolutely, I'd sever a finger or two if that were true. Why? Because I would love to see people live. I don't want to see people die, and I don't want to see people die without hope. But I'm also not a supporter of hoaxes. And so when he started saying that kind of stuff, I started like reining in, you know, his free time on air, because it was like, look, I love you, I respect you, I do. I feel ashamed for how your people were treated. I really do. But we have to keep this honest and provable and evidential, and, you know, and we have to keep it that humble, because if we start making boastful comments. What?
Here's the spiritual aspect to it, is you're not always going to be able to get that, David. This is why you need the direct experience to know. Like, you can listen to the stories and go, yeah, okay, you know, but you're never going
to
get there.
Okay, so what was your direct experience, my dear? What did they do to you that, you know, changed you, healed you?
I'm telling you, I needed this early I was a journalist who left the mainstream news business, started a positive news newspaper because I, you know, basically heard a voice saying, build it and they'll come. And so that's kind of where I was at. But I was very much still coming from my mind. I didn't believe anything that I hadn't experienced. And, you know, in a way, nor should you, right? Like you say, be discerning. When I had the newspaper, I had an advertiser who turned out to be an Olympian skier from Germany, and she had a connection with the indigenous community locally. So that's a really big leap and stretch of how dots connected. But that was the dot connection that happened. And she gave me this surreptitious kind of voicemail one day in the office saying, there's this Indian thing. It's supposed to be a healing ceremony, and it's quote-unquote freaky. Meet me there. And apparently you're supposed to bring tobacco and food donations for this mystic guy that traveled the country doing these processes. And it was called an Inipi, so not a sweat lodge, which is you.
What tribe was he? I mean, what tribe? What tribe he was?
I do, and I can't remember right now. It'll hopefully come to me during the story.
So where was the location again?
Lakota.
In Lakota.
So it was,
okay, that's
he was from the Midwest in the States. And there's very few, I don't even know if there's any more of them traveling and doing this anymore. They don't live a long time, the ones that do this, because this process that they go through is like going through the death and rebirth process, and it's physically and energetically hard on them. So the one that I know of.
Was this the guy that had the anterior fontanelli in his head that was unclosed? There was a Lakota medicine man that was that. Not that guy. Okay.
Nope.
See, I know my stuff on this. Okay. Keep going, girl.
We're
going to
get there.
All right. I'm listening.
Now, remember, this is my direct experience. So I go knowing nothing. I showed up with a loaf cake and a pack of smokes. Apparently, that's not what you're supposed to do if you're ever invited.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
You didn't show
up with, like, Cools, did you?
Or
Virginia Slims.
It may have been. I literally had a pack of smokes.
Virginia Slims. I think you'll like these. Or Tipperillos. Yeah. That's what Ingo Swan smoked, Tipperillos. Yeah.
Well, it was weird. It was the wrong thing anyway, but, you know, meant well, right? Coming from the right place.
I know.
So I get there, and it's some weird building.
A clue for
it's
you
like,
next time when you go do this. Bring a bag of – just bring a bag of tobacco. Like, there's a tobacco that you can buy that's just a tobacco. It actually has an Indian on it with a full headdress.
Yeah. I know which one
okay,
you mean.
Okay, it's a very, there you go. Whatever that is, since they're not paying us to talk about them, that is what you bring. You bring that because they will
not
go, And you say, yatahe, yatahe. Yeah, so, you know.
I will say that I was the only one there with a pack of smokes. But anyway.
Well, good for you. I'm sorry I keep interrupting. I'm just trying to be funny.
So was that a weird situation? So it was all comfort zone shit, right? So first of all, it was the only white person there, I think, except for the Olympian skier. So the Olympian skier was there. How that all connected, I don't know. Anyway, so Bag of Smokes, Loaf Cake showed up, and it's in a back alley in North Vancouver, going into this room that I think where they had AA meetings or something. And so we pack in there.
How appropriate.
It was. And so they start, I mean, we're just sitting there and sitting there and sitting there and sitting there and sitting there because it's just all these people were packing in this little room. And while they're packing in this room, I mean, I don't know, I have no idea how much time, it was a lot before they even started. And I'm watching them set up the sacred, this is not like the touristy Indian stuff that you see. This is the real shit, like bones and organs and all kinds of dead animals.
It's not moccasin keychains and things like that, you mean?
I mean, I was seeing the real stuff.
It's
okay?
Real
and
stuff.
If they were,
okay.
So they're setting up this massive altar. In a big square in the center of the room. The lady who was sitting next to me, I was kind of chatting, she was showing me how to smudge and stuff, and it turned out she was some sort of female elder woman of some...
Yeah, there's a name for that.
I can't remember what it was.
It's like a
I can't remember.
I'll remember it later. Okay.
Okay. Carrying on. So I'm sitting and chatting with her, and... on and on. I'm watching babies and children and all these, you know, indigenous people packing in the room. And then I'm seeing this huge band, like native band of drums and, you know, well, they're all drums, setting up around the altar. And then this, the medicine man who was, I almost remembered his name, something bear. Once they were getting ready to start, they started tying him up in leather straps, and then they bound him, his entire body, more leather, like big leather blankets, and then they bound that with leather straps, and then just at that, I had no idea what the hell I was doing there, or what was going to happen, or anything at all, right, other than the Olympian skier said, this is cool, go check it out, and so I'm sitting there, and just at that moment, forgot to say, all this time while they're setting all this stuff up, they're covering and taping black garbage bags and duct tape. They were taping every possible entrance point for light and air, all the vents, all the windows, all the door cracks, everything. Like we were sealed up in plastic in there, right? And so hours went by setting this up. And just after they got him all tied up and bound up and retied and kind of laid him on the floor,
What again was being laid on the floor? I missed it.
The medicine man was being tied up, bound up, and then tied up more, and then laid off in the middle of this altar floor.
Petesanwen is by the name. Petesanwen is the name of the holy woman. Petesanwen.
Okay. So she.
I'm sure. Sorry to derail you again, but. Okay, I got to say this. The reason they're sealing everything up is because they're cutting off the flow of oxygen, which means that in a given time. In a given time, what's going to start to happen is everybody is going to start to become hypoxic. And in hypoxia, you're going to do what? You start to hallucinate. All right, continue. Just going to put that in there.
David.
Go ahead, my dear, my divine woman. Go ahead.
Okay, now. So just before things started happening, and they started happening really fast and really big, the native woman kind of leans over and touches my leg and goes, just try not to freak out. And then right at that second, the lights went out, the band starts up loud as hell, and so much happened at once. It was, and you don't go hypoxia in 10 seconds and start hallucinating. That's impossible. It's just because the door was open.
But you said
it
took hours for them to set it up.
Yeah, but the door was open the whole time. The door was open the whole time.
Okay, so fresh air supply until not. All right,
well,
got it.
you don't instantly go into hypoxia and hallucinate fully in 10 seconds. You just don't. The first thing that happened to me was there's some sound playing. Hang on. Oh, there we go. Okay. Mystical sound coming in. All right.
The washer is done. Yeah. I have my washer and dryer connected to my phone, and so every time they stop, I'm talking to somebody, and all of a sudden I hear this stupid tune because this notice comes up. I'm like, damn it. And it goes on for like 30 seconds. You know, it's the most horrible tune. It's like, who the hell picked the tune for this, you know, washer dryer? And, you know, that are Wi-Fi connected. Anyway, go ahead.
So you got it down.
I'm still claiming hypoxia, but go ahead. All right.
Telling you, the door was open the whole friggin' time. The second the door closed and then the lights went out and they started playing, boom. I've never experienced this except in sweat lodges where I go through this process of having to surrender to being there. I like completely freaked out to the point where I was telling the person I was with, I can't stay. I've got to go right now, and yelling in his ear. Like, I'm going to be in a coal-shaped hole on the wall. Like, I cannot. It didn't make sense. It wasn't logical. And then once I got through that, a few minutes later, I'm literally seeing spirits, balls, energy of light coming in the room, flying around, rattles, the lights, like fireworks inside these rattles that were on the altars, lighting up and jumping around. I could see giant wings flapping. I could see the entire illuminated silhouettes of all the people in the room. With these flashing, it's so hard to describe.
How many people were there? How many people were there?
Oh, Jesus, I don't even know.
Like 50? 100?
It was a really small room, and I would guess 100.
Okay, small room, 100 people. It only takes 4 minutes to consume enough oxygen per person in a small confined space to reach a state of hypoxia. Oh, I got to say it, Nicole. I love you dearly. I have to say it. So what are the symptoms of hypoxia? What starts to happen to you when you start to get into a hypoxia?
I'm telling you, it wasn't hypoxia. I guarantee you.
Okay. I believe you in your heart that you believe that. Okay, my dear. Keep going. Sorry.
Okay.
Going to be the anchor here. You're going to have to drag me along on this.
Well, see, this is only something you can get on board with when you experience. Do you remember that that not so amazing Randy, that depressed little magician that would run around and tell people, you know, I'll pay you $1 million.
That lied to federal investigators and fraudulently filled out forms for his gay lover that he brought out, that came out of wherever he came out of.
Did he do that?
Yes, he was up on charges for fraud. A guy who made his living as one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. He loved saying that. Him, Joe Nickell, Michael Shermer, and Ray Hyman. These guys made their livings running around and denouncing people like you and people who listen to your show. They destroyed their lives for a living. Yeah.
Well, he went after me.
He did that
for a period.
He was a closet. He was never graduated from high school. Became a stage magician. Yeah, he was up. He went to like a sophomore in high school, and never went back. Never got educated beyond that. Became a stage magician. Yes, and he was a closeted gay guy, which I don't give a shit about that. My point is that's what he was. So that's kind of strange. But for a guy who's destroying people for not telling the truth, according to him, and then, yes, he had a gay lover that he met somewhere, somehow, who was a Latino man from, let's just say, El Salvador. I don't really actually know where it was. But, Randy, the amazing Randy, falsified government documents to get his lover to be able to stay with him. And then, of course, when he realized that he was actually going to go, possibly go to prison, him and his gay lover, for what he was doing, he got enough friends together to sponsor a documentary to try to, you know, change the tide of, oh, well, you know, he was oppressed because he was gay. It was, he needed to seek asylum because he was gay. And then, of course, they investigated that and came back and went, actually, no, that's not the case. You were just trying to get him here, and you were willing to lie about it. So, yeah.
Well, he was a very sad little man, and he came after me, you know. Do you remember my spoon-bending kits?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which are still online, by the way, spoonbendingkits.com.
And get them, because I've seen her do it, and I've seen Yuri do it.
Well, anybody can do it, but
I know
this
it's not
is
trick.
This is the whole point, is that you can't believe in it unless you have your direct experience. So he came after me saying, yeah, I'll give you $1 million if you can prove it. And I'm like, put your damn wallet away. I'll give it to you for free and just do it. And then you know what we're talking about. Like,
do you know how many of those jackasses that are out there? There's actually $49.5 million out there being offered by skeptics. Do you think in God's name that any skeptic would ever go turn around and watch you bend the spoon like a guy like Randy and go, you convinced me? I mean, it's like, right? No, it's never going to happen. So anybody listening, if you ever are confronted by one of these jackasses, just, you know, grin at them and walk away, because Randy's perspective on life, he's dead now, but his perspective on life when he was alive was everything's a trick. Everything's an illusion.
If you say
you can do a certain thing, what he will do is he'll turn around, scratch his little head, and go, let's figure out how to do an illusion to replicate what Nicole says she's doing. And therefore, because I can create an illusion to replicate it, what she's doing is bullshit. Because here's what she's doing. She's doing this illusion that I just did, and I just made this up. Disjointed thinking. It's incorrect thinking. I have no more respect for him than anything.
Yeah, and I literally said to him, what a sad life he must live to be in that hate-filled box, you know, of disempowerment. I mean, you're missing the whole point entirely. But this is what ties into this, is that this piece is a piece of it, is the direct experience piece that where there was, it's not just what I saw or thought I saw. It's the what feeling came through, what messages came through with it that were relevant and correct, and what followed me home and never left and has been, that piece has been guiding me.
But what was that? I know I keep interrupting you, but what was that that shifted you?
Well, number one, as I learned to be more open and get out of my journalist brain, because, you know, like you, I always wanted, well, you know, the 3D, you know, simple facts laid out so it's nice and comfy and I don't have to, you know, take any risks or be uncomfortable to stretch and learn, right? And so I had to have the direct experience of seeing, knowing, and hearing. It was like, it took a long time, like layers of understanding, kind of like when Daniel was talking about his experiences back in the day. And he didn't have all the, you know, summary of the meaning until many years later, right? When it's experiential, it takes a while to kind of understand. But when I came home that night, I was like, well, I was weird, you know, kind of going back to self. And I had set all these candles around. I was going to have a bath and go to bed. And I literally could feel that I was not alone. Got out of the bath, got the hell out of there. And I've never been disconnected from whatever that energy is. It literally gives me messages to this day. But again, that's not something that you can prove on a piece of paper. It's experiential and it's direct so that I know, but that's as far as it goes until you have your experience.
Well, you know the experience, but you don't know if it's real or not.
When you're having a direct experience, you do know, because there's a, like I said, there's the relation to what's happening. There's different levels. Let me use an example, David. When you were shot right, with that in the bullet going in the helmet, and you had your experience with an angel telling you you were on the wrong path.
Yeah, but I also know that what I do, you're correct, yes. But I have always explained that in a terms of I don't know what that was. Mm-hmm. As years have gone by, I have concluded, based on my experience, that what that was me talking to me. But back when I had no reference for it and it just suddenly happened, did I know it happened? Yeah, I know it happened. Did I know what it was? I have never said ever that I know what it was because I didn't know what it was. I believed what it was because I believed it. You know, I know it happened to me, and therefore I believed what I was describing to people because I know I had the experience. But I never have said to people, I know that was real. I know that was an entity. I know that was something. And I've never, in the years that I've been teaching as a remote viewer, I've never had an experience of something like that where I could come back and say, empirically, I know. Right, I have irrefutable, undeniable evidence of I know that. What I know is that you and I are connected. What I know is that we are omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, eternal beings. That's what I know.
Yeah.
I know that from physics. I know that from experience. I know that from doing the work in the physical and the non-physical. But there are so many things that we are asked to come into our experience Rolodex, that we just have to look at them and say, I know that happened, but I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
and
I want to be
know
clear.
If it was real.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. That's what I am saying as well. I'm not actually putting any story or meaning in particular. I just know that that was part of that real connection beyond mind. It was beyond, beliefs at the time, and it connected me to something bigger, but it was real.
Sure. And that's fair. I get that. So
cool.
Where were you doing? You were doing this north of Vancouver. But you don't remember the First Nation people that were doing it.
So I'm pretty sure it was Lakota. I think his name was Running.
I don't think Lakota are up there. Lakota or Sioux?
No.
They're part of southwestern United States.
Yeah, it was from the Midwest in the U.S. And this one guy, there's very few people that do Indians. And so this one guy was traveling around, in the States and Canada, and I don't think beyond.
They call them, do you want to know what their slang is for those guys? The Lakota, Dakota, Kakota, there's a whole bunch of them. But they're called roadmen. They're called a roadman. These people that travel to do these kinds of ceremonial things, they're called a roadman. They have terms for all these people. Yeah.
Very few of them do Inipis, and I don't even know if there are very many anymore. It was, not something you can just, phone up your local, reservation.
Roadman Incorporated, yeah.
Yeah.
Roadman will travel. I will be there to do your shamanic. They don't call them shaman. That world, they're called medicine men. There's a name for like a medicine woman. There's a name for. There's a category called a holy man. There's a category called holy woman. And then it goes into these other the road men, which are road women. And they're more clearly in that society, more road men than road women, more holy men than women, more holy, more medicine men than women. But, what we need to do is get on the show, Kenny. We need to get Kenny, medicine man, to talk to you about these things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the main point of this was, again, through my direct experience, because I wouldn't have that belief if I didn't have my direct experience. It would have just been like, interesting, right? I don't know. But what I learned from that was to pay attention to indigenous rituals and that to know that something was legitimately there at the base of some of these stories and experiences.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I do. I agree. I would never argue with that. I mean, and you use the right terminology, belief as opposed to knowing. I mean, you know in your heart, but you have no empirical evidence of what you saw. And you were opposed to me giving the scientific qualifications for what was happening. there's a reason why people, I know that the medicine man was saying, oh, we're going to seal out the bad spirits, seal in all the good spirits and intention.
Oh, no, they didn't even explain anything. No, I didn't know what the hell was happening.
Which is, okay. So I, in my scientific mind, if I was standing next to you, I'd be going, what they're going to freaking do to us right here is they're starving the oxygen in the room. I don't give a damn. If it's a small room and there's 100 people in there, it takes 4 minutes for each person to consume the oxygen in a confined space. 4 minutes. Which means that, is it instantaneous? No. But do they close the door and allow a few minutes to elapse so everyone becomes hypoxic? God damn, yes, they are. That's the only reason that they are doing that. And the same thing happens in the sweat lodge. Fire consumes oxygen. You're in a sweat lodge, and if there are coals that are there, which typically there aren't, the coal fire is outside. They bring the hot rocks in. So they bring the hot rocks in, which which causes the oxygen moles to accelerate in their movement, and you probably consume in a place like that where they're superheated, you can consume more moles of oxygen than you normally would outside. So people become hypoxic, and one of the symptoms of hypoxia is the deeper it goes, the more you start to hallucinate. Now look. Am I saying that that's a bad thing? No, I'm saying that explains what's happening to people. Is it a spiritual experience? It is to the person that's experiencing it, I guess. But is it a true spiritual experience? I don't know. Right? I don't know the answer to that.
As soon as they
opened the door and you started breathing oxygen again, you'd recover fairly quickly. It's not like it lasts with you for days or
and
even hours,
and that experience lasted with me for quite some time, and in some ways, indefinitely. Have you ever been to a sweat lodge, David?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I talked about one last night. I was doing sweat lodges at the Omega Institute, and when I was single, I was going there, and I thought it was a cool thing because I was doing the sweat lodges with, like, the employees of the Omega Institute. So I was, how old was I? I was, like, when I first did it, I was probably, like, 50, 40, maybe 48, 47. And I'm doing sweat lodges naked with, like, 21-year-old people. They were all hippies. Like, all the guys were dreadlocks and stuff like that, but...
Was this a real sweat lodge that was led by
Well, what does that mean?
Well, it's
well,
very.
What does that mean? You mean like the like the white guy in Arizona that killed a bunch of people? You know, claimed to have been trained as a shaman. That guy?
Yeah. No. What I mean is indigenous people that have come up through their paths, and those are the ones that are spiritual.
There were no holy men. No holy women. No medicine.
Doesn't
men,
count.
This was a hippie sweat lodge, and I did probably four of them. So I got in the hippie sweat lodge, and I'm there. It's uncomfortable. My back hurts because my spine was at that point collapsing even then, and I'm like, my back hurts. I'm sitting here, my ass is in the dirt. I'm naked. I'm sweating. People next to me. Girls or no girls are dripping sweat all over me. A lot of those folks didn't bathe regularly, so it was starting to be like, which is worse? The lack of oxygen, the heat, or the odor of the sweat, a body odor. And a spiritual experience for me, no. It was an exercise in being capable of enduring the discomfort of being there.
You were
That's
literally missing the key element, and there's nothing spiritual about that kind of process, so... I would invite you to be open to an actual
dirty sauna. So I would ask people, be careful, be discerning, Don't just go do a dirty sauna because you think it's going to be cool. You are correct, and I agree with you. If it's not if it's not set in the correct intention, if it's not given the correct energy, if all of the people are not prepared to do it, and if they are not doing it with purpose, right? Doing it with purpose and doing it with intention, then it's just a waste of your time, and you should not do it. You should not engage in something like that. That's like flying to Peru to, you know, do something with an ayahuasca arrow, you know, to go in and step in so you can say, yeah, I went to Peru and did ayahuasca. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Don't do that. It's become now, you know, ayahuasca has become a cottage industry in South America. And it used to be like had to select the perfect vine, you know, perfect age determined by diameter. Now, because they've got so many yuppies, you know, I say yuppies, you know what I mean by that, flying down there in freaking droves of people. There are no shaman have now taken their hands off and gone, not interested, not really. I mean, some of them are like, well, there's money to be made here and they're doing it. But most of them have not, which is why what you hear, the people that are managing this stuff are called ayahuascaros. That means basically ayahuasca cowboys. Okay, that's what they are. They've got Uncle Juan's recipe. He got that from, you know, Uncle Benito, and so they're pulling all this stuff, and they are now denuding this very sacred vine from these forests, these jungles. They're starting to run out of vine. Isn't that like the most crazy, understandable yet, world version of this stuff? This was a sacred rite, a sacred medicine, a sacred, you know, vine that grew. And they only harvested certain vines because they had to have been, you know, they had to be a certain kind and dimension, and it had to be, you know, capable of serving as the spiritual medicine that they wanted. And now they've gone through all that shit, so now it's becoming, you've got guys down there like trying to cultivate these vines. So now we're getting an industrial grade ayahuasca down there. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. And all the spiritual purpose behind it has now just been commercialized, and people are listening and they're going down there. They're thinking they're going to go have this great, you know, spiritual awakening.